Hello and welcome to the Talking Outsourcing podcast. My name is Mark Kobayashi-Hillary. I'm in Abuja in Nigeria at the Bridges Across Borders conference right now, and I'm speaking with Emmanuel Barreto from the International Trade Center. Emmanuel is a senior advisor from the Trade and Services section, and we're talking a lot about ICT, BPO, and the development of high-tech services, and particular services in the South and developing economies. Okay, so we're talking about the outsourcing in Africa. We're at the Bridges Across Borders conference and exhibition in Abuja. And Emmanuel, what do you think about some of the opportunities for outsourcing? I mean, we're looking at ICT services here and particularly exporting those services. So what do you see as the main outcomes of this conference then?
Before we head towards the outcome of the conference, because we are right in the middle of it, why don't we look at actually if there are opportunities in Africa? From my point of view, there are opportunities in Africa. And I think that the first things that we should look at it is from a services perspective. There are four different ways that you can export services. And you can export services by being in your country without having to leave. And I think that is probably one of the first exporting modalities that African outsourcers should look at it. So if you have like a multinational, for example, based in your country, it could be a bank like Citigroup or, you know, even a local bank that's got a branch like in Nigeria, for example, Zenith Bank, that it's based in Nigeria, but it's got a branch in Ghana, or Standard Chartered that it's from South Africa and got a branch in Kenya. So you do have opportunities out of these banks to do some of their financial processes. So there is opportunities. But also, I mean, what I like also to point out to a lot of the African prospectors of business process outsourcing is that we have to start from somewhere. You cannot start from scratch. So we should start by looking at our competitive advantages in the different countries. And some people would look at competitive advantage based on the skills level, the infrastructure, regulatory framework. I would like to look from a goods perspective. So let's see, what are you good at in terms of products? Mm. So if, let's say, you're in Botswana and you're an excellent exporter of mining products, so why not look at what are the processes that go on into the mining industry that can make that country a potential exporter of BPO for the mining industry?
Yeah.
The same thing would be in Nigeria for oil and gas, for example.
In fact, this happened today at this conference. Someone came up to me and said, we are a manufacturer, we're doing this, this, and this, but we want to get into services. What do you think we should do? And that this, my response to him was, well, look, you know, you're already doing supply chain and logistics, and you're doing this kind of stuff. Why don't you consider creating an offshoot of your company, serving your own company, and then that is your service company. So, it's do what you're good at.
Yeah, but it's quite interesting because that's critical. It's what you heard today, it's not going to be the first time that you're going to hear in Africa. Mm. And I also believe that it's not going to be the first time that you're going to hear that from a developing country. Mm. There's a huge issue relating to internationalization of companies. Mm. How do they actually go abroad? Yeah. How do they reach out to markets? And most importantly, how do I actually internationalize my product? Mm. They have no clue. Like consumer taste, they don't know what that is because they don't do that back home.
Yeah.
So they don't even train the consumers to become taste worthy of the products that they sell. Mm. And it's amazing, but it's a marketing strategy. But I mean, I have to say, I have analyzed a lot of developing countries, and I have seen that across the board. Whether you are in Latin America, you can be in Brazil, or you can be in Honduras, different levels of development. You can go to Africa, and you are in South Africa, or you are in Rwanda. Mm. Again, different levels of development. You are in Palestine, or you are in Egypt, different levels of development. I mean, you go to Asia, the same. Mm. And what I'm telling you is that all of these guys, they go to university, they learn their skills extremely well. Mm. They're excellent doctors, because they have a lot of meats that they can play with. Sorry to say that, but that's the truth. they can be excellent engineers because there's a lot of infrastructure projects that are required in these regions, and they have to deal with a number of different issues.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, what happens is that these guys don't learn any marketing skills at their university degree.
Yeah.
So they can't market themselves.
Mm. Okay, so what we're observing is that we're seeing a lot of people that go to university, they get great engineering and sort of hard skills, and then work in companies or found their own companies, and then but find that there's no way that they can export those services. They've just got no way of really selling. The ability to sell is not there.
Yeah, no, you know, it's quite interesting because I think that we, in the North, I mean, I also come from the South. I come from a developing country. But in the North, we are, because I live in the North, we are spoiled.
Mm.
We have too much technology available easily to us, and that makes us actually become less brainish in terms of, you know, using it to analyze and to further develop what you have learned.
Yeah.
And that's not the case here. So if you're an engineer here, I mean, you're going to have to deal with things, and you're really going to have to go deep into the engineering if you have to make a bridge across, you know, two sandbanks.
Yeah.
And if you do the same thing, for example, in Europe, you're going to use the latest computer technology to calculate everything for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that has an impact on the skills that you developed. What I'm trying to say here is that these guys have a very high quality skill, but they don't know how to market that level of knowledge.
So, you're highly positive of the potential that exists within many African countries. But how do you think we're going to unlock some of that potential then?
Oh, it's interesting that you say that it actually unlock. I always like to say that there's no locked economies or landlocked economies.
Mm-hmm.
What there is a brain locked economy, and we definitely have to unlock them. And it's definitely by starting on your neighborhood, moving into your neighboring countries, into your region, before you can actually reach out to markets further out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a learning process. And it's definitely an event like the one that we are experiencing here, that it's going to give these guys a platform that they can actually try out and see what works and what doesn't.
Mm.
And also learn from sharing their experience with others and watch and try to assimilate as much as they can what the others do.
Yeah.
I think that is what we are trying to bring here at this particular Bridges Across Borders. Mm. And this is what we've been trying to do for the past 5 years, because this is the fifth edition.
Yeah.
And we're not going to stop here. We hope to go further. But we definitely think that the opportunity does not only lay in Africa, but it is all across the developing world.
Mm. So, I mean, there's a lot of South opportunities for services, basically.
Indeed. Not only for services, for anything, but I think the services sector, definitely. Because the South-South is like you have developed solutions in a developing country that it's easily adaptable to another developing country. So, for example, microcredit.
Mm.
You know, if you have a microcredit that it's running well, let's say in Uruguay or in Chile or in Colombia, these guys know how to deal with highly risk individuals.
Mm.
People on the levels C and or D and E, which are the lowest of the lowest strata of the population.
Yeah.
Now, that risk assessment knowledge could be outsourced to countries in Africa easily, because the level of risk assessment is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that could be done in that sense. And also for the mining industry. I mean, where do we mine today? It's in the South.
Mm.
So a knowledge from one area could easily be outsourced to do it in another area.
Yeah.
Whether that would be geological analysis or that would be just data record entry, for example. But I do believe that in the South we have a lot to still see in terms of trade among themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a lot of the focus here has been on the BPO industry, and so particularly IT-enabled services. Do you think that this is particularly different to any other form of service, or is it just we're looking at the high-tech enablement of service industry in general? I mean, it's like technology is enabling other services to internationalize.
I like to look at technology the same way as I look at tourism. These are enablers. Basically, they're vehicles. You can use them appropriately and get more people to be employed and also lift people out of poverty. Mm-hmm. Or you can just use them sporadically, badly used, and not have the country benefit as a whole. On the IT sector, the benefits of it is that neither the consumer nor the buyer needs to leave their home countries. Mm-hmm. It's not the case of the tourism.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, you do require a certain set of standards applied to your country. And part of that is the legal framework in which you operate. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that the data that I'm sending to you, you're not going to be selling that to someone else. Mm-hmm. So those types of guarantees are some things that the developing country would have to look at. Mm-hmm. The skills, it requires less. The issue that I have today with the developing world is that not the middle level of the skills is being built. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you don't have technical schools specific for areas within the outsourcing, the IT outsourcing part.
Yeah.
And they have a tendency to get newly graduated students, people that just fresh out of the university.
Yeah.
That is killing the future of the country. Because you learn a skill and all of a sudden you are using something else.
Yeah.
But just because your level of literacy is high, because of the pay rate is high in a BPO company, you're going to go and work there. But for the country, that's very bad.
Yeah.
So as a country, you have to look at the set of policies that you have to put in place that you would basically support some of these technical schools to start to develop, to be formed. And also to give some sort of a benefit to companies that employ people that are not graduate. Mm-hmm. I think that is key to get the youth off the streets, because that is the biggest problem in Africa. Mm. And it's probably one of the biggest problems also in any Latin American or Asian country. Mm. Two is that you're going to get a new set of technical skills that it's going to get spread, because it will start with IT, then it's going to go into nursing, and it's going to go into a lot of other different service sectors.
Yeah.
Which at present, it's non-existent, or if there is, it's very limited.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because you know, certainly India has talked a lot about a shortage of labor. The labor supply there into the industry is supposedly suffering a squeeze, and that creates all sorts of other problems with salary inflation that's above average, but it's almost as if they've set the bar at the graduate level only, even for jobs that anywhere else would be people that maybe have 11 years of schooling.
It's 3:00.
It's an interesting dynamic that why are not places like India and other countries in the South not developing those kind of the technical skills that should exist within non-graduates?
You know, it's quite interesting, because let me give you one example as far as I know. It's of an Indian consulting company, Tata. It's gone to Uruguay and established a technical school in Uruguay. Mm. Or I think it's software engineering. Something related to IT, but very specialized. They went there because apparently the level of education, the level of knowledge is quite high. Mm. But and they have about, I think, 3,000 students that get graduated per year, or something around those numbers. But the most amazing thing is that the cost to attend those schools is more expensive for 1 year than if you go for 4 years at a university.
Right. Yeah.
So it's completely unrealistic. Mm. So, and then I think it's very important that one understands the developing world as a whole to be able to understand why these people are charging so much. Mm. In a developing country, you're faced with three major instabilities. It's either political instability, economic instability, or social instability. Mm. You can get riots that disrupts the country. You can get the government that gets completely turned out. Or you can get an economic meltdown. Mm. Currently, you can have the three at the same time.
Yeah.
And what happened is that these guys, because of these instabilities, they don't know if they're going to be in a position tomorrow to earn money, yeah, to own a company, or to have a living. Mm. So they try to benefit as much as they can today by charging as much as they can today. Mm. And this is something that it's impeding the developing countries to actually look at the long term, mm, and plan. And that has an impact even on the education of the people that would be employed by the BPOs, which would create employment, create growth, mm, and make the country look good because, you know, you are capable and able to do something on a level that it's higher than just weaving baskets.
Yeah.
But how do you get out of that chicken and egg situation? Mm. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. I come from a developing country, but I was educated in the developed world. And I've been working with a developing country, in developing countries for about 12 years now. And I haven't been able to actually see the solution. Mm. How do you break that loop? Mm. Anyway.
So what about the conference itself then? I mean, we've got another day to go. What do you think will come out of it in terms of the discussions that we've had? I mean, certainly it was a very positive response to the AOA proposal, with an agreement for that to be launched in principle. But then there's also this sort of connectivity that's going on right now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that some of the stuff that we proposed as conference organizers, we are not conference organizers, we're part of the UN, but as organizing the conference, we proposed the establishment of the association, which I think it's an excellent opportunity for the African countries to brand Africa rather than brand their individual countries. Mm. I think that is crucial because a lot of the credibility is negative about the continent, but it's more importantly about certain countries. Mm. But I think that the most important thing that comes out of this is definitely the networking that it's going around, mm, and these 1.5 days of established or pre-established one-on-one meetings. Nevertheless, the result of that is not seen but 1 year from now. Mm. I give you one example. Last year in 2006, in October, we organized a similar event in Ghana. Yesterday, someone from the Netherlands told me that, you know, Emmanuel, the event in Ghana was something that opened such a window of opportunity to us that we just signed about 20 days ago an agreement with the Ghanaian government, mm, that we had done an assessment and we have identified an area in which they could do for Dutch-based companies. And that program is funded by a Dutch NGO, and it goes from training local people to undertake the job to establishing the technological equipment that is required, all the way to have already the contacts with the company so that they can start doing business. So that for me is brilliant. I mean, I slept extremely well last night, I have to say. But it takes time for some of these things to come up.
Yeah.
And also, if you go around and you ask, people would not answer, would not give you any feedback. You have to wait for people to come on their own to you and say, thanks for that, because it led to this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not until it's led to something that you can feed back and say,
exactly,
that's as a result of that conference. Yeah.
Some people may say that's an unfair business. I just like to think that I organize things because I believe on what I'm doing, and I am not really looking at the results. Or I am not, I am not organizing something because I want the results.
Yeah, it's just the likelihood that the result may come, but you don't necessarily know.
I know it will come. I know it comes. I know that a lot of people benefit from what we do. But if people need quantifiable, if people need numbers, it's very difficult to give them. And I don't like to start something by thinking that I have to give them at the end of the day a number.
Yeah.
I mean, we already have so many numbers. We have social security number. We have an employment number. We have a bank account number. We have a BIN number.
Yeah.
So why do we have to focus so much on another number?
All right. That's great. Thank you, Emmanuel.
I thank you.
Thanks for downloading the Talking Outsourcing podcast. For more information about my computing column, go to computing.co.uk. And for other information, go to markhillary.com. Thanks for listening.